This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Vaccination by said date. And the penalty for this is obviously not good for the companies, although it has a mixed interpretation. I follow now the reporting by Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution. He teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, about how not one but two federal courts, the Fifth and Sixth, have both come up against this mandate imposed after the president's remarks November 5th of 2021. And the Supreme Court has now heard arguments by the government and by people challenging the government. However, we need to go back to the beginning of where this comes from. Richard, a very good evening to you. As I understand it, and this is law times law, the government strength is based upon the Occupational Safety and Health Act, OSHA, and both instances of challenges were heard by different federal courts, the Fifth and Sixth Circuit. What is the nature of the mandate based upon OSHA? Good evening to you.
Hi. Well, the situation is as follows. OSHA is a very old statute, you know, 50, 60 years old. And what it's designed to do is exactly what the title says, to deal with occupational safety and health. So its jurisdiction is limited to what takes place inside the workplace. And then the question is, what are the kinds of things that you're entitled to do? And the usual situation that we dealt with is you get slippery machinery, you get floors that don't quite work, you get a ventilation system that's broken and so forth. And what OSHA is designed to do is to essentially allow for inspection and correction so that these occupational failures go down. And in one sense, the statute has been a success. That is, the rates of injury that you start to see everywhere throughout the economy and the workplace are down fairly sharply over the last 50 years. I don't think most of it is due to OSHA, but at least OSHA didn't interfere with it. What you're seeing now is a very different kind of a situation. This is not a workplace injury or situation in the sense that you've got bad equipment. The theory is that there are going to be people who are going to come into the workplace, all different kinds of workplaces, and as they start to interact with one another, it turns out that they're going to create conditions in which you could start to spread the virus. And therefore, what you're going to do is you have to take steps in order to stop it. Well, this is now an emergency rule that's being put forward because the standard process for OSHA is so long that it could take years before a new rule would get into place. And what they're doing is they're claiming that there's a kind of a grave industry injury that's taking place and that the only fully feasible solution to this is to have the mandate. And the moment you start looking at this, all of a sudden your eyes start to glaze over, which is what happened in the Fifth Circuit, but not in the Sixth Circuit. And what's the situation? Well, the first thing you have to ask yourself, why is it that the only thing you could do is a vaccine mandate? My view about all of this is that you really want to do in workplaces is to improve the level of ventilation so that air circulates more rapidly so that the virus doesn't concentrate in high levels in the room. Even if you're wearing masks, if you exhale and you stay in a closed place, there's going to be a lot of that stuff coming out, and it will go right through the mask when it comes back in. And so is it a grave necessity to put in the vaccine if, in fact, you could do other kinds of things? The second point that was raised by the Fifth Circuit, but not the Sixth Circuit, is there's just a huge variation in different kinds of workplaces. There may be situations like meatpacking plants and so forth where the risks are rather high, but there are other kinds of places like offices where these seems to be rather remote. And why are you putting the mandate in place where in some cases it may have some effectiveness and in other cases it does not? Then there's the third question that people start to raise. You look at the age at which it turns out that people suffer from the traditional Delta variation, and it's almost all concentrated in older people, whereas the workplace is filled with people who are much younger. So when you're trying to make the projection, what you're trying to do is to figure out how you take a very small number of accidents that will take place of this sort in the workplace and make it even tinier, where the real problem is somewhere else. It turns out to be in nursing homes, even in private establishments of one kind or another. So why are you doing all of this stuff? Then, of course, they say there's some small factories of under 100 people, and many of them may be quite dangerous, but you let them out. And so what the Fifth Circuit did is they said, look, this is an extraordinary statute. There's a heavy burden that is to be placed upon the government to succeed. There are all sorts of things that are missed. And by the time you get done with it, say the mandate just isn't there. When you get to the Sixth Circuit, it's a different world. This was a panel of the Sixth Circuit, a liberal panel in a conservative circuit today, and they went back not to the particular, the history of the grave provisions of the OSHA. What they did is they decided to talk about general administrative deference to expertise. And they claim that the CDC and the FDA and all these other experts know exactly what's going on, and it's not our job to second-guess them. They have a people to protect. And what they then did is they relied and took almost on face value the numbers that were put forward by the government in terms of the number of deaths that would be saved, the number of hospitalizations that would be stopped, and all the rest of that stuff without starting to challenge it. And so essentially this comes back to a standard administrative law battle. On the one side, you have one guy saying, look, I'm looking at this statute, I'm looking at these things, it just doesn't fit. And they're giving some degree of serious scrutiny. And then on the other side, you have people say, these are experts, courts don't know anything, we're just going to hold off hand and let them go. And so the central question of modern administrative law, which manifests itself in all sorts of different ways, is what's the level of scrutiny that you give to administrative action? And if you give a higher level of scrutiny, this thing is going to fail. Lower level, it might succeed. You look at the Supreme Court, and on the question of deference, it has now changed its attitude. Probably the six conservative judges are very skeptical about deference, and the three liberal justices are more sympathetic to it. So the likely outcome in this case is going to be 6-3 that the mandate will be struck down.
The history of OSHA and these emergency decisions, emergency recommendations, is that relevant here? Because you report, quote, in its 50-year history, OSHA has issued just 10 ETSs. Six were challenged in court. Only one survived. Is that a significant detail to either the Fifth Court's decision or the Sixth Court's decision?
Well, I think it could be the decisive detail. That certainly doesn't sound like deference to me. It sounds to me like that when you're trying to use extraordinary powers, you have to meet a higher standard. And I think that's the way the Supreme Court is going to look at it. If you talk about normal administrative actions in which deference is given, the success rate is probably 70 or 80%. It's certainly going to be a hell of a lot higher than it is in these particular cases. So given that particular pattern, I think what happened is that the Sixth Circuit, essentially in that one sentence, basically set the agenda. And I don't think that, whether the Fifth Circuit set the agenda, and I don't think in effect that you can undo that. So my guess again is exactly the same as it was before. Given the way this thing is starting to play out, you're not going to get the deference. And then, I didn't even talk about this, but if you start looking at the medical evidence on all of this stuff about effectiveness and risk of vaccine, the government's case becomes even weaker.
The detail also about Congress. As I understand generally, Richard, the Supreme Court defers to Congress, likes to defer to the legislative branch and not to override it or challenge it. OSHA is a product of the Congress. Is there a record of Congress saying that OSHA can be used in this fashion? Was the original idea of endorsing OSHA meant because it had these abilities to intervene in emergency fashion?
Well, I think there are two slightly related documents, and let's just clear them up. One of them is, do you think when they gave you the power to the agency to deal with grave emergencies, was this to be expansively or narrowly construed? And I think the answer is the term grave is very serious. And if you could start to show that lesser methods than essentially the mandate can solve many of these particular problems, you're going to lose. But there's also another sense, which is that this thing is so huge that you don't want any delegated body to make that particular decision. What you really want to have is that Congress to come back, look at this particular problem, and then authorize the mandate if it thinks that it's fit. And the theory is, for something this important, you have to have a higher level of legitimacy. And the Chief Justice is very fond of this doctrine. It's called the Major Questions Doctrine, which says that the normal rules about deference to agencies don't apply to very, very large questions of this sort. We had a similar kind of issue when the Biden administration tried to extend the rental moratorium on a pot of COVID. And the Supreme Court eventually, after they got some assurances that we'll do it right, that they did it wrong, they struck it down. And so I think what's really going on here to some extent is that the Biden administration, even in a fairly short time, has shot its wad on with respect to credibility. and so that they're not going to get the kind of deference, not just because of the general discussions about administrative law, but because they don't think that these guys have been good actors in the various kinds of cases that have come before them. And the Biden administration is incredibly peremptory in the way in which it starts to issue executive commands. They say, I'm the president, I can do anything the way I want it to be done, is the way in which the president has worked with executive orders. So I think there's going to be a kind of a reaction to that. Seeing the extent to which executive orders and peremptory commands come out of this administration on matters where it's dicey, they don't have a fund of goodwill before the six conservative justices that's going to make this thing go. I mean, I haven't heard all the arguments that took place on Friday. I haven't had the time yet. But when you get the tenor of the arguments, the liberals are willing to take on faith the optimistic projections of the good that will be done by this statute, the conservatives not. And if you have skepticism about the numbers and skepticism about the institutions and skepticism about the process, then what's going to happen is you're not going to allow this thing to take place.
I'm speaking to Professor Richard Epstein at the Hoover Institution, a senior fellow who teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. We're discussing the mandate by the administration dated November 5th and the dispute that went to Fifth and Sixth Court in December of 2021. Now a presentation to the Supreme Court to make a decision about whether the mandate and date goes forward or not. All of this, however, took place before the variant known as Omicron. And when we come back, does Omicron make all of this moot, given the anecdotes about what the vaccine can and cannot do for you? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.